2FM.
Very good evening. It's Tuesday, the 4th of October, and this is Game On. Coming up today, can Liverpool get back to winning ways as they face Rangers in the Champions League?
When you prepare for a game, you prepare for a game, independent of your situation, the situation you're in. And Rangers, I think, do extremely well in general, but in Champions League, the results they had were now not exactly what they wanted. So we expect a team who's really fighting for a result, and that's what we have to prepare for.
We'll be live to Anfield ahead of that. Plus, Alan Cawley, who was so giddy about going to Talca Park, we decided to get him back to discuss the drama in Drumcondra last night. And he will join Mark Langdon to set us up for the rest of the European action, where Bayern Munich kicked off in the early match against Victoria Pilsen, and they're already two up. In rugby, Michael Cochrane catches up with Irish coach Mike Catt on how the emerging Irish are faring in South Africa. And in cycling, we've Lara Gillespie on making up for lost time at the World Track Championships.
I feel so much physically and mentally stronger than I was before. I'm getting all my new PBs and everything for power. So I think the rest has done me well, but I missed out on a lot, and it was a hard time physically and mentally as well. But you know, those things only make you stronger, and hopefully that's my bad luck out of the way.
And we'll also have another copy of FIFA 23 to give away. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Well, as Ruby said, we're joined in studio by Alan Cawley. Alan, big build-up there from Ruby. Big build-up to that game last night, and we'll talk about it in detail in a moment, but it didn't disappoint.
It didn't disappoint, Dave. And normally when I build them up, they deliver. And it was some game, yeah, it really was. We'll get into it, obviously, in detail in a wee while. But it's not often you get a 4-all on a Monday night that has cards and sendings off and penalties and, as I say, loads of goals. So it was a good night's entertainment, Dave.
Ruby, obviously yesterday you spoke in detail about the Christoph Soumillon incident on Friday. Now, that story isn't going away. The Belgian was handed a 60-day ban for that elbowing incident involving Ross Ryan last week on Friday. But he has now, of course, significantly lost his retainer with the Aga Khan. So, first of all, your reaction to that?
Yeah, look, it's a big blow for Christoph. Not the first time in his career he's lost that job, all the same. He was retained rider for the Aga Khan Studs between 2002 and 2008, and he lost it back then for a comment he made about a French trainer. He got the job back in 2014 and lasted until now in 2022. A big job in France. The Aga Khan has most of his horses there, so it was a very lucrative one for Christoph Soumillon, but they didn't take kindly to what Christoph did in St. Cloud last Friday, and he has lost his job. Big blow for him.
Speaking to the Racing Post in the past few hours, he has spoken of his, I suppose, obvious disappointment at today's announcement, adding that he has bridges to build.
Yeah, I suppose he has. Yeah, he has, and look, whatever way you look at it, he has damaged his own reputation. I don't for one minute think that he intended to knock Ross O'Ryan off the horse, and I do believe that his suspension of 60 days was about right for the crime he committed. I think it was an error, a misjudgment, and he got a pretty hefty ban, which he had to get because another jockey fell off. I think he got the appropriate ban, but losing his job is paying the ultimate penalty. Racing is very different to many other sports, Dave, and he's been sacked for it.
And in terms of his future, how damaged is he in terms of potential future employers?
I wouldn't think he's that damaged at all. The biggest part is getting the rides. I mean, André Fabre is the biggest trainer in France. He has Michael Barcelona riding for him. But look, the Aga Khan Studs have left the door open for him to ride in their colours if the trainer so choose. And I mean, if you're Jean-Claude Rouget, who trains a lot of the Aga Khan horses, I doubt he's going to want to leave Christoph Soumillon in the stand. Coaches don't tend to want to leave their best players on the bench, and I can't imagine Jean-Claude Rouget will feel that way about Christoph Soumillon either. So only time will tell. He obviously lost a big contract in Japan because he is suspended. That will cost him a hell of a lot of money, and he'll move on. He'll be back. It'll be 60 days from the 14th of October before he'll be on a horse in public, but he'll get over it. Anyway, Dave, I think we've run Christophe Soumian's story as far as it's going to go. I think it's a bit of a mountain out of a molehill myself, but we will try and do this FIFA competition correctly last night, seeing as myself and Marie managed to not even announce the winner last night. I promise you, Dave Kelly will do it tonight.
Big
so for all you
now.
FIFA fans will know that EA Sports FIFA 23 has officially launched worldwide and is available now on all gaming platforms.
And for the first time ever, FIFA 23 will feature women's club teams from Barclays Women's Super League and Division 1 Arkema, extending its position as the world's most authentic football experience.
To celebrate its release, we have a copy of FIFA 23 to give away every day this week. Yesterday's winners was Niall Doherty. Sorry we didn't get to you yesterday, Niall. And all you have to do to be given a chance to win today is answer the following question. Which team are currently top of the English Premier League?
And you can text your answer name, email address and whether you want a PS5, PS4 or Xbox copy to 51552. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for details. Alan, we mentioned at the top of the programme, Ruby mentioned a good start to the game for Bayern and it's got even better.
It has. Sadio Mane is after following up his goal at the weekend with another one tonight, 3-0 after 20 minutes. They're running riot, and when you think the form has been patchy with Bayern Munich so far, obviously domestically as well, and as I said, they got the win at the weekend, which was coming off the back of their longest winless run in 2 decades, I think, which is crazy start really, when it just goes to show the dominance that they've had in the Bundesliga. But they followed up tonight obviously against Pilsen, who you'd expect them to beat, but to be 3-0 up after 20 minutes, it looks like the game is over already, Dave.
Now, in terms of goals, Tulke Park was certainly the place to be last night. You were there. We mentioned it at the top of the programme, but, I mean, where do you start with that game? Amazing.
Yeah, the goals are following me around at the moment, Dave, but 4-all, it was absolutely brilliant game. And we mentioned last night on the show that it was probably a bigger game for St. Pat's in the sense that they're obviously hanging on to the coattails of Dundalk, trying to get that third European position, and they were 5 points off them before the game last night, and they have to play Dundalk at the weekend. So had they won last night, they would have obviously closed that gap and gone into the game at the weekend. So it was a bigger game for them, I felt, because you look at Shelburne, who have they've had an okay season, let's just say, but it was new for them obviously this season after getting promoted, and the new squad that Damien Duff had assembled. So I just felt the object for them really was to establish themselves in the Premier Division, which they have done, Dave, and they're sitting, I think, in 6th or 7th position. They're fine in the Premier League, but all their focus now was on the semi-final of the FAI Cup against Waterford at the weekend. So in that regard, I just felt it was a bigger game for St. Pat's. But Shelburne were really, really good, and I've seen them over the last 2 or 3 weeks now, and even over the course of the season, what I've noticed about Shelburne, they're getting better as the season has gone on, which you would expect with a new group as well. We always felt that he was trying to gel in a lot of new players, Damien, because he turned over the whole squad literally at the end of the season and put his own stamp on things. So it was always probably a case that it was a work in progress and it would get better as the season has gone on, and that is certainly is what happened. So I think going into the game against Waterford, they'll be very hopeful, very confident, because as I say, their form is good. But last night's game, the only thing that'll disappoint them is that they went 4-2 up after half time. It was 2-2 at half time. They went 4-2 up, but they just couldn't hold on to the lead, and I'm sure Damien will be disappointed with that. But overall, for the spectators and for all us who were there watching it, it was absolutely brilliant.
And go ahead,
Ruby. No, as you said, they were 4-2 up. Damien was questioning, was it the first penalty that St. Pat's got? Looked soft enough, Owen, was it?
It was hard to tell where I was, Ruby, but it looked like the forward had got the other side of the defender. I think it was Luke Byrne, and it did look like he was kind of climbing all over him. Now, maybe the forward made a meal of it. I think it might have been Owen Doyle. He probably did with his experience. But to me, it looked like a penalty. The one that followed up, then they got another penalty, which is quite rare in the game. You see a referee, I think he gave 3 on the night because he gave 1 to Shells as well. And it's quite rare. And you might look at it as well. People look at stats on games, and there was a lot of yellow cards. There was a red near the end. There was 3 penalties. There was an offside goal. So people might look at that and think the referee had a poor game. He was actually very good, Ruby, considering all he had to deal with, because there was a lot going on, because there was a bit of needle as well between the teams, and there was a bit of needle on the bench. It was getting feisty at one stage between the two benches, because I think it was St. Pat's had put the ball out.
Alan Quinn got sent to the stand.
Alan Quinn got sent to the stand, Ruby, yeah.
And Tim Clancy.
As I said, it was feisty. It's passionate. Never mind that horse racing stuff. This is proper passionate stuff.
It was passion, wasn't it?
It was, to be fair. And as I said, I'm not sure if this was stemming from a build up or kind of, because there was a game postponed earlier in the season and Shelburne wanted the 3 points for it, but prior to the season as well, the game in Richmond Park, there was a bit of needle between the two benches also, and they're quite close together in Richmond Park. I'm not sure if it was a carryover from that, had something gone on that night, and as I said, it was a carryover, but there was definitely serious needle between both benches and both sets of players as well, which is good and which is what you want to see, once it doesn't obviously go over the line. And I don't think it did, to be fair. I know they got sent to the stand, but that's almost kind of something I suppose the referee feels and needs responsibility, has to do now if it's getting out of hand on the line. But I don't think anyone stepped over the mark in terms of they weren't squaring up to each other or on the verge of hitting each other or anything like that. So overall, as I say, Monday night, it was a brilliant game in front of a huge crowd in Talca Park as well.
Well, I watched it back on YouTube this morning, or the highlights of it, Dave Allen, and I didn't think it was over the top. So I say the referee was trying to keep a lid on it as best as he could. The Marseille Sporting Lisbon game in tonight's Champions League was delayed by 15 minutes to a 6 o'clock kickoff in France, and Sporting Lisbon are already a goal in front. Would that be a surprise, Alan?
It would be a surprise, Ruby, yeah. Sporting, as you say, scoring 1-0. And they'd be disappointed with that. Marseille had scored after a minute as well. You mentioned that there was a delay. I'm not sure if that had an impact then when they did obviously start the game. But it would be a surprise, because if you look at that group, you'd fancy, obviously, Spurs group as well, but Sporting have had a great start. They've had picked up 6 points out of six, so if they go away to Marseille and win tonight, they'll be sitting top of the group on 9 points, almost qualified already. You would have probably had Marseille and Tottenham down as the favourites, even though I wouldn't rule out Frankfurt either, but if Sporting were to hold on there, it probably would be a surprise.
I know Mark Langdon joins us on the line, and we mentioned Liverpool at the top of the show, but seeing as we're on Marseille Sporting Lisbon, we have to go to Tottenham Hotspur and Frankfurt. That's where they are tonight. Spurs, big game for them. They have looked rocky on the road, Mark.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. Ruby, of course, beaten in the derby, and it's easy to forget that it was Tottenham's first Premier League defeat of the season, because there's been quite a strong reaction in the aftermath of that defeat at the Emirates. But I think that's always the way when you lose a derby game, particularly in the manner that Tottenham lost it. It does bring pressure, and as you say, not being great away from home. You know, got a lucky point at Chelsea. You know, I thought it was an average performance when they drew at West Ham as well. They were beaten in Lisbon by Sporting on match day two of the Champions League. So while it's been pretty good at home, there's definitely question marks about Spurs away from home. And, you know, Eintracht Frankfurt are not a particularly strong team, despite the fact they won the Europa League last season. But what they have got is a very passionate supporter, you know, that will make the atmosphere, you know, really difficult, I think, for Tottenham in the early stages. You know, it's the kind of game really for Tottenham where they've going to have to sort of just stand firm, I think, in a sort of cliche away game in Europe, if you like, where they've just got to, you know, try to quieten the crowd and then hope that their quality can come through, like it did with Sporting on match day one. They went to Germany, were on the ropes really in the first half, and then managed to run away with the game in the second period. I think that could sort of be a similar pattern to the game, but at the moment you just wonder whether Tottenham have got the confidence to be able to stand firm in such a hostile environment.
Alan, I know Spurs have Son, Richarlison, Harry Kane, but are they good enough at the back in Europe?
I think individually they look okay. I mean, you've got a World Cup winning goalkeeper in Hugo Lloris, who made a big error against Arsenal on Saturday. Christian Romero does brilliantly for Argentina, among the favourites for the World Cup. So, Eric Dier's back in the England team as well. So I think individually it's not too bad. I think it's the collective, and a lot of Spurs fans have pointed to the midfield being the issue, because Conte's sort of been adamant that 3-4-3 is the way to go, but that leaves Bentancur and Højbjerg outnumbered usually in midfield, and I think that's putting extra pressure on the defence. Conte has suggested maybe he'll go to a 3-5-2 and bring Bissouma into the team. I think that would help them sort of just have a bit more control of the game, and then the defence would look stronger as a consequence of that, I think.
Mark, from an Irish point of view, we're obviously very interested in Matt Doherty. He played a lot of games for Tottenham last season. He's been very much on the fringes this term. Now, he was spoken about by Antonio Conte at the pre-match press conference yesterday and made a few headlines here in Ireland. Just in case anybody hasn't heard it, let's hear what Conte had to say.
Also Doherty. Doherty last season played every game and... Now I'm not seeing him in the right way to start the game. I'm not stupid. I don't want to lose. I try to put the best team and to pick the best team. Then if they trust me, it's okay. If they don't trust me, I'm the coach, and then I have to pick the best decision for Tottenham.
Now, obviously, English isn't Conte's first language, so perhaps we have to take that into account, and perhaps it maybe wasn't meant to be as scathing as it came across. What did you make of that?
It really was scathing. I think that Conte did mean it, actually. He was very angry in that press conference yesterday. I think the bigger context, really, is that the question kind of starts with the journalist saying that Tottenham fans think that Emerson shouldn't be playing as right wing back, and then listed off Doherty and also Jed Spence as other options, and Conte went into both players as to why they weren't starting. I think that in terms of Doherty, he's had, you know, he's not come back, I don't think, in the best shape, and I'm sure that is a frustration to him and to Conte, because I think he was sort of the preferred option as the right wing back, but it was a very serious injury he got away to Aston Villa. I thought it was a really poor tackle on him, and it just hasn't played enough games, and it becomes a chicken and egg situation in that, you know, Conte wants him to be absolutely fit and firing, but he can't do that unless he's playing more regularly, and you just go around in circles. Hopefully when it comes to the Premier League, there'll be an opportunity now because Emerson's suspended, but Conte's not been happy, I don't think, with the fitness of Doherty, nor the in terms of Jed Spence, that he's just not, he doesn't feel that he's ready, and I think Conte got his back up just by the fact that people were questioning the selection of Emerson, who of course got sent off at the Emirates.
Alan Cawley is in studio with us too. Alan, if you were Matt Doherty, would you be slightly concerned about your future at Spurs?
I'd be devastated, to be honest with you, Ruby. And Mark's right, I think there was an injury he picked up in pre-season as well, because if you think back to last year when he did get himself into the team, he got on a run of games and he was playing really well, and Conte has proved that if you're fit and ready and doing your business, you will play. But whatever has gone on in the meantime after the back of that injury, that he hasn't come back into shape, that Conte feels he's ready to go and he's not going to play him, and he sounded really angry and frustrated. Now, I don't know if something has gone on in private or if Matt has had a conversation with him where he feels as though he has gone to him, which generally is the case. A player will go to the manager if he's not getting game time and ask him why, and was there a falling out? I'm not so sure. I don't know, Ruby, but he certainly sounded a bit kind of vexed in terms of maybe the questioning, and as Mark said, why they're questioning the fact that he hasn't given him, Doherty or Jed Spence, an opportunity. But if I was Doherty listening to those comments, and I would certainly be concerned and worried. And if you think back to Matt Doherty as well in the game against Scotland, and I'm sure Spurs and Conte, they're all paying attention, I'm going off on international duty, the mistake he made for the Scotland goal as well, I don't think that would have looked too good from his own point of view, and Conte tuning into that as well defensively, which is one thing and one area which he concentrates on so much, is them being well disciplined, defending strongly. And when you look at the goal that we conceded, Ireland against Scotland, with down Matt Doherty's right hand side, I'd say he was furious over that as well. So if I was Doherty at the moment, I'd be concerned about those comments.
Well, it's not as bad as the goal Sporting Lisbon have just conceded after a howler from their goalkeeper has allowed Marseille to equalise there after 14 minutes. It's 1-1 between Marseille and Sporting Lisbon. Moving on, back to Liverpool, back to where we started. All the pressure is on Jurgen Klopp. Rangers are coming to Anfield tonight. Mark Langdon, it's their first ever competitive game together. Is this the kind of game Jurgen Klopp needs?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it on paper, I know there's a bit of a derby feel to it, but you know, on paper, there's quite a big difference between the levels of ability of the two teams, and you know, you'd feel like Liverpool would want to get that victory. I felt like they kind of turned the corner because they played well, I thought, against Ajax. I know the goal came late on and it feels like it's, you know, a bit of a lucky win when Matip scored in the sort of 89th, 90th minute. But they fully deserved to win that game. It was much more like the Liverpool that we come to expect. And then, you know, they come out against Brighton and it's more of the same, particularly in terms of, you know, really starting games sloppily. And, you know, they don't really want to give Rangers any encouragement because clearly Liverpool are not playing as well as what they were last season. I think there was a time probably last season or last couple of years where they could give teams, you know, big head starts and still come back because they had Mane, they had Salah and all the other options that they've got up front. Obviously Nunez, because of that red card, hasn't really got much of a run of games at the moment. I think they are missing Mane in the attacking third as well. And, you know, the midfield's not quite sort of come together properly this season. And I think that, much like I said with Tottenham, where the midfield was causing problems for the defence, I think there's also a bit of that going on at Liverpool. Obviously been some individual errors as well. And there's just a lack of confidence. But it only takes, I suppose, a couple of wins and you know, Liverpool will start to feel like their season's turned around. This is a good opportunity to get 3 points. And that they need it, really, because of that defeat away to Napoli on match day one. It has put the pressure on them to make sure that they do, you know, really complete their job in their three home games.
Yes, Jurgen Klopp, I suppose, has had to answer some difficult questions of late, particularly in relation to his defence. Let's hear what he had to say at the pre-match press conference ahead of the game with Rangers.
I think we had this, one of the conversations we had already this year was before and after Ajax game, or before after the Napoli, especially after the Napoli game, when we all realised, okay, wow, that's now really a low point. We have to change the things quickly. Didn't play Wolves, played Ajax, didn't play Chelsea. Meant we have, so we couldn't pick anything up and keep it from the Ajax game, really. And then on top of that, you face Brighton, which in a very good moment, a very good team with a new manager, and you concede these two early goals, which is in no situation helpful, but in other situations maybe lesser harmful than it was for us that day. And it turned around, not with a brilliant performance, but with a proper fight and adapting to the situation, denying Brighton in the areas they wanted to play and all these kind of things. So, and you are 3-2 up, and then you could see. It's not the first time and that something like this happened, that we were not controlling the game. We had our moments, we had chances, we had top moments where we could have scored the fourth goal. Didn't do that. And so you leave the door open, and that's what happened. And so how it always is in life, when you have a problem, when you spot a problem, you think about it, you think you have the solution. And of course you expect then the solution to be instant, influential, and bam, sorted. That's in football never the case. It will never be the case. Even if we would have won the game 3-2, it would have been a completely different feeling, obviously, but with similar problems. And that's why we just have to keep going. Yes, we have to improve. We have to play better, consistently better, and defend better, attack better, pretty much everything. It's like it is. But I don't want to talk too much about it, but it's really like this. It's only 2 years ago we had a very similar situation for different reasons, where we lost our full defense, our center halves, all of them pretty much, and had to find solutions, and we lost our game completely. Nobody could recognize anymore. We just wore the same shirts, but couldn't react as quick as people would wish. And but we found a way out because we worked on it, and that's what we will do this time. And so our general situation is obviously is important, but not so much for tomorrow, because that's when you prepare for a game, you prepare for a game independent of your situation, the situation you're in. And Rangers, I think, do extremely well in general, but in Champions League the results they had were now not exactly what they wanted. So we expect a team who is really fighting for a result, and that's what we have to prepare for.
Alan, Liverpool have obviously had a phenomenal few seasons, winning the Champions League, winning the Premier League, getting to two Champions League finals. the level that they've been competing at, and a lot of these players have been competing at, so they've got a lot of miles on the clock. Is it inevitable that there's going to be a dip at some stage, and maybe this is it? But obviously, how did Liverpool get out of this dip?
Yeah, possibly, Dave. And I think that's kind of suggestion from many quarters, that because they've been kind of rock and roll for the last 3-4 years, and the intensity that they play at in particular, you probably are going to reach a point where it's going to kind of go on the wane a little bit, that's very hard to maintain. But I still think there's major problems there on top of that stuff as well. The fact that they've been on the go a long time, I think the problems with Trent defensively is obviously a major issue, and it's kind of rearing its head a lot as well. Now, for all he offers you offensively, he's becoming a liability defensively as well, and I think that's a bit of a dilemma for Klopp. Now, I always think he came out obviously in major defence of him last week off the back of the England stuff when Southgate wasn't picking him, and he defended him as he would his own player. And Trent is a great player. I don't think he's a great player. I think he's a good player. If he was a great player, he'd be very good defensively, and he's not very good defensively.
Is it oversimplifying it to suggest that perhaps he should be just employed as an attacking midfielder and have a different player in at right back?
Yeah, well, I think it could be getting to the stage where they might be considering that, because obviously you have to weigh up the pros and cons in terms of what he offers going forward, and we all can see that, and the quality that he has in going forward, and the assists and all sorts. Now, the argument there is he better coming onto the game as a fullback than playing as a right midfielder? And it's a different kettle of fish if you're receiving the ball as a winger on the half turn rather than coming onto the game, and you can be easily marked that way. And I'm not sure he has those winger tendencies as such. He's just a really good crosser and a good passer of the ball, so it's easier to back up the play and obviously putting crosses or spray balls like he does, as I say, backing up the play rather than being already up in the play as such. I think Van Dijk is a problem as well. He obviously hasn't come back nowhere near the level that he was at last year as well, and I think he's a problem. The midfield is a major problem, because you mentioned the rock and roll stuff that they've played over the last 3 or 4 years, and what they've been built on really is that energy and intensity at the play out, and the pressure they put on the ball high up the pitch, that it was very hard for opposition teams to get at Liverpool because they were winning the ball so high up. And they don't have that at the moment for whatever reasons. And I don't know, is it the personnel that's in midfield? Henderson's legs looks like he just can't do that anymore to the intensity that he did. Nunes was the big signing in the off-season, and obviously he got sent off, but he's looked major question marks over him in terms of the money
they
spent.
Very early days, though.
It is very early days, but you look at Haaland and his early days, and they're the comparisons that people will make when you spend that kind of money, Dave. They want people to come in and hit the ground running straight away, and I don't think Liverpool are a club that will buy a player for that amount of money and allow him 2 or 3 seasons. You need to be hitting the ground running if you're one of the top players, sadly, and that's the way it is. So I think there's 3 or 4 problems.
You haven't even given him 2 or 3 weeks.
I haven't, because he hasn't looked any good in what I've seen, to be honest with you, Dave. And he did that idiotic thing as well in getting himself sent off, which was really stupid. So I think there's 3 or 4 problems for him, Klopp. And if you listen to that clip, there was a lot of explaining going on in there, Dave. And when you're explaining, you're losing.
You most certainly are. We will have team news from Anfield with Fergal Brennan before 7 o'clock. Marseille are now leading 2-1 at home to Sporting Lisbon. But Mark Langdon, there are plenty of more games in tonight's Champions League. Inter Milan v Barcelona. Barcelona on a bit of a roll.
Oh, they are, yeah. I mean, you know, the only defeat for Barcelona came at the Allianz against Bayern Munich, when I felt they were the better team for most of that match. And just Robert Lewandowski against his former club missed one absolute golden opportunity and two others that he'd probably expect to score as well. They hit the post. So they played really well, Barcelona. They've obviously gambled everything on, in terms of making sure their team is competitive for now and not really worrying about the future. I think they're a good team. There's a lot of pressure on both teams tonight because, you know, Bayern are almost certainly going through. Whoever loses this game will really be under it. I would say that, you know, Barcelona are definitely the favourites to win this game. Inter are struggling in Serie A at the moment. Their coach, Simone Inzaghi, under a lot of pressure. Lukaku's been injured, conceding too many goals. And, you know, I just think Lewandowski probably be the difference.
Maybe he will be. Ajax playing Napoli. Napoli are absolutely bombing, and they have won 9 of their last 11 on the road.
Yeah, they're a really fun team to watch, as anybody that sort of witnessed that demolition of Liverpool earlier on in the competition. A lot of attacking flair in the team. This should be a really good game. Both sides better going forward than they are defensively. I think it's hard to win away games in the Champions League, but if I was pushed, I'd probably edge towards Napoli to win this one.
Bayer Leverkusen are in Porto to take on the Portuguese team, and they are having a torrid time. They were thumped at the weekend by Bayern Munich.
Yeah, they were. I mean, at least they got a good result against Atletico on match day two. These are two pretty average sides, it has to be said, at this level of competition. Might cancel each other out. Go for the draw.
Club Brugge or Club Bruges? I'm going back.
Bruges.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, Stan Dawson telling me it was Brugge. What the hell does he know? Versus Atletico Madrid. Spain versus Belgium even. But the Belgians are a much better side this term than they were last term.
Yeah, they are. They've been one of the surprise packages in this season's Champions League. And why not let it continue? I'm not saying they maybe be able to beat Atletico, but wouldn't put it past them getting a draw from this game. And that would still be absolutely fantastic result. Maybe a share of the spoils in this one as well.
Mark, I have the commentary down in the background behind me, so I couldn't tell you who's playing in goal for Sporting Lisbon. Any ideas?
So Sporting's goalkeeper is Adan that plays in goal for Sporting. I've been watching the Bayern Munich game, but I think he's having a bit of a shocker, isn't he, Ruby?
Absolute shocker, I'd say. He cannot wait to get out of France. Mark Langdon, thanks a million for taking our call. We're going to take a quick break. Game on 2FM. Welcome back to Game On this evening, where we're going to turn our attention to cycling and cycling because we're going to look ahead at the Track World Cycling Championships from Paris, which are due to take place this month between the 12th and 16th of October. And we're looking at it because Ireland will be represented by a women's team there. Emily Kay, Kelly Murphy, Mia Griffin, Alice Sharp, Orla Walsh will all be on the team. And I'm delighted to say that the youngest member of the team, Lara Gillespie, joins us on the phone from Mallorca. Lara, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good to be on. How are you getting on?
Oh, we're getting on great, thank God. Laura, I can always, or not always, but I often wonder, how do people in Ireland get involved in track cycling when you think that we don't even have a velodrome?
I know, it's crazy. We do have an outdoor velodrome, that's how I started. But right now we're out in Mallorca on a camp. But I've always done a bit of cycling here and there and mountain biking and... Yeah, it's a bit mad once you get out on the rail track. It's quite different to the one we have in Sundrive, but everyone should really give it a go at some point in their life.
Give it a go. I was watching a video of you earlier reflecting on cycling to school every morning down through Power Scorch. You've always been on a bike, but you were always very sporty. You played hockey for Leinster, you played football, Irish dancing, you ran for Ireland, swimming, triathlon. How did you decide I'm going to pick cycling?
It kind of happened by chance. I was in fourth year TY in school and I was still doing hockey and stuff, but I ended up breaking my elbow and I was going to go to the Youth Olympics for running, and then I said, oh, I'll try to do the selection for cycling, and I got in and I got a medal there, and then I kind of thought, okay, I should keep doing this. And then once school was over every summer and the hockey was done, then I kind of put my focus on the cycling and it worked out pretty well.
So there you are, at the Youth Olympics on a bike. You're going to the Track World Championships next week. So much for the Williams train of thought that you had to play tennis from the age of four, or the Agassi way of looking at it. You just took it up on a whim and away you went.
Yeah, definitely. And it's similar to the other girls on the team. A lot of them started in their even late 20s or in early 20s. So it's definitely something you can always pick up. And I think once you have a good level of fitness and definitely a lot of mental strength is needed, so it's that kind of tough sport.
Oh, it is an incredibly tough sport. You did a bit of road racing as well. The tactics are obviously much different on a track, or are they much different on the track to the road?
Yeah, much different, because we don't have teammates on the track in a bunch race. We obviously do in the team pursuit, and that's like completely different to the road. It's just full gas non-stop. The tactics are completely different with no teammates.
No teammates. Well, yeah, team pursuit, I suppose, maybe, yeah. It is a sport that England, I suppose, mastered for the Olympics in London. Do you think it's one with a velodrome here that more people could get into and could expand and grow in this country, with an indoor velodrome, sorry?
Oh, yeah, 100%. That would be a huge asset to us if we had that, and we could knuckle down on all the little small parts that we maybe are lacking right now, but we're definitely getting there, and the track in Mallorca is such a lifesaver for us. But in the future, once we get like kids on them younger and get those skills and just get people used to it, it would make such a huge difference.
You say the track in Mallorca is a lifesaver, but you're still in Mallorca. You're from Enniskerry. How long have you been in Mallorca?
I think we've been here 10 days or so, and then here for another 5 more days before we travel to Paris. But yeah, we spend a lot of time here, but between road racing and track, you're kind of never really at home.
Never at home. Does it get tiresome having to go to Mallorca just to train?
Yeah, it definitely does, because you're not around your family, you're not around your loved ones or your friends, and that all does, it's a factor, of course, and that maybe other people wouldn't think about, but we're definitely grateful that we had this opportunity, but yeah, can't wait until there's one at home.
Obviously there's a team of you out there, you're the youngest. Is it hard being the youngest?
Ah, no, they're great girls and a lot to learn from, and yeah, I love being on the team with them, and they've kept the show on the road really the past few years for this team pursuit, but definitely when I was going through college that was quite hard because I was kind of in between everything.
Do you think you missed out on college life being an elite athlete?
Yeah, well, I didn't get to go on one night out in college, that's for sure, but I still got to meet new people and got my degree, which was the most important thing in my education. So, you know, you have to make these sacrifices.
Oh, you have to make sacrifices. What did you get the degree in?
Health and Performance Science in UCD.
And have you put that to much use in your career?
Yeah, I guess, like, it's just I had a lot of that knowledge anyway from doing it in and out every day. But I'm using, like, the research and the health and performance stuff now, working for UCD a bit, so that's exciting.
Working for UCD, that is not a bad thing to say for anybody in life. What is your average day in Mallorca, Lara? What time do you get up at? How much training do you do? How much do you cram into a day in the sunshine?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's different at different times of the year. At the moment, we'd be getting up, doing an easy ride or a couple hours in the morning, and then we're on the track for about 3 hours, and that's where we're doing our hard efforts and we're going full gas really and getting that technique down. But then there's other days where we're on the bike for 4 or 5 hours just on the road and getting that base mile. So really depends. Nothing too fancy at all.
Nothing too fancy at all. What about the downtime? I mean, there has to be a huge amount of time to fill. And when you're not at home with the usual things you might do in your own house, how do you pass the downtime?
To be honest, there's actually not that much downtime because we're kind of on the go. If we're on the track, we're pretty much, like, we only just got back from the track now, and then you have to make your dinner and just all those simple things. We're literally eating and on our bikes all the time, so there's not much else to do. But I used to be doing my college work, and then now we can just read or write or whatever we want, really. But there's still not that much time because then we either have to be napping or sleeping in between other sessions.
Napping or sleeping has to be done. Cyclists, I did read, one of the really good sports books for cyclists, never sit when they can lie because this is a waste of energy. So I'm assuming you're of the same mentality. But Lara, will you get to go home before you go to Paris, or do you go to Paris from Mallorca?
We're going to Paris from here on Saturday, so straight over there, and then we'll get 2 weeks of off-season at home.
2 weeks of off-season once it's finished. And what, logistically, what's involved? Moving kit, bikes, wheels, all the equipment that goes with it. Who organises all that?
Yeah, so Cycle Ireland will organise that with us. We each have a bike box with our track bike and our road bike and a set of wheels and some of our kit and stuff. And then someone might bring an extra bike box because we have 2 track bikes. So yeah, it's a lot of lugging around luggage, and you need to know where your trolleys are. And I think we're all pretty much pros in most of the European airports at this point now.
They see, I say, the baggage handlers are delighted to see you coming. I would imagine. Tell me this then, when you're in Paris, do you train in the velodrome where you're racing, or is that such a unique event that it has training tracks to go with it?
Yeah, no, we have to train on the velodrome, which would be nice because then we get to see how the line is and where the bumps are and all that. Sorry. And we'll get 3 days of training before we get to race on it.
Lara, track cycling is a particularly technical sport. What are the attributes needed to be successful in it?
Yeah, well, you need to be fast. You need to have good sprinting legs, but then you also need to be really, really fit and aerobically fit and able to repeat those maximal sprints multiple times.
And I'd imagine mentally it's quite challenging as well, because concentration levels really need to be at their maximum.
Yeah, 100%. I'm sure we're going round and round in circles. Like, you can nearly get dizzy. And we're all riding really close to each other, and you have to be really mentally aware and alert the whole time. And then with the team pursuit, you're kind of suffering the whole time. So you just have to be fully on the ball and trusting that you'll make it to the line.
And you will be travelling to Paris on the back of a very successful Ross Naaman, two stage wins.
Yeah, it was class. We had a great week, and yeah, I'm really happy that I could deliver and had the legs, and my form is now coming around after a few rough years, so that was really, really nice, and to be at home, and yeah, the crowds were great, and it was just a great week overall.
And obviously you're going to be in Paris next week, but ultimately the aim is to be back in Paris, I presume, in the summer of 2024 for a rather different event.
Yeah, well, it's for the same, for the track cycling, but yeah, the Worlds and Olympics, they're both the top of the level. We'll be competing all the same people. So it's a nice, we'll know our way the next time we come back. And yeah, that's definitely the big goal.
What's your ambition for the week ahead, Lara?
Well, hopefully we'll get a Team Pursuit PB and be top 8 in the world. It'd be very nice. And then hopefully I'll get a bunch race. We haven't been publicly selected yet, so we'll be waiting on that. And then hopefully I can get the best out of my legs and my whole body then. So really excited for that.
Hasn't been publicly selected, but what would you be hoping for, quietly, if you're allowed to say? Don't want to put you on the spot.
We
I know
there's
teams being picked and things. It can often be awkward as to what you're going to say.
We don't know yet, and it's just we're still doing our practice races and stuff to see who will fit best. And yeah, the best riders will get selected, although unfortunately I wasn't able to go attend to any of the World Cups this year because I was sick, so there's only a few races that I'm actually allowed to do, so hopefully I'll get them.
With a bit of luck you will. Obviously I didn't touch on it and I should have much earlier in this interview, but it has been a pretty hard last 18 months for you between injury and illness.
Yeah, look, I'm over it now and I'm delighted to be over it, and I feel so much physically and mentally stronger than I was before. I'm getting all my new PBs and everything for power, so I think the rest has done me well, but I missed out on a lot, and it was a hard time physically and mentally as well. But you know, those things only make you stronger, and hopefully that's my bad luck out of the way.
Oh, I love the attitude, not for looking back, only wanting to look forward. Lara, I hope it holds you in good stead next week as well. We wish you and all the ladies on Team Ireland the best of luck. Thanks a million for taking our call. We're going to take a quick commercial break.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. So the emerging Ireland team, coached by Simon Easterby, play their second match on the South African tour tomorrow against the Pumas in Bloemfontein. Keane Prendergast from Connacht will captain that side. And earlier today, Michael Cochrane caught up with Mike Catt.
And just a final question from me, taking a helicopter view of the whole thing. How useful has this tour been so far? Because there is still some criticism, you know, as to whether it actually should have taking place, or maybe the time of the year that it is actually taking place.
Well, I think you should ask the players. That is a question. Maybe you could ask the players whether it was worth them coming on this trip or not, whether their development. But from our point of view, it's great to work with guys again. You know, there are obviously a few from New Zealand that we've got on board. But also what it does, it just gives them a bit of an appetite in terms of, wow, this is where I want to go, if this is where they want to go, and this is what I've got to do to get there. So, you know, giving players opportunities, and I think that's massively crucial. Some of them probably wouldn't have played for their provinces that are out here. It's not just about the top five or six. So it's giving them an opportunity to come into a different environment. How can they adapt? And I think long term, every single one of these players will benefit from the process they've been through.
My cat speaking to Michael Corcoran. Now, it's just over an hour to kick off in the Champions League between Liverpool and Rangers. The team news from Anfield now comes from Fergal Brennan.
Yeah, plenty of changes in attack for Liverpool on the back of that 3-3 draw against Brighton at the weekend. And Jurgen Klopp's gone for a change of system from 4-3-3 to 4-2-3-1. That means starts for Darwin Nunez, Diogo Jota, as he looks to freshen things up. Frustration at the weekend, obviously, in Premier League action, but the issue for Liverpool has not been scoring goals. It's been keeping them out of the back of the net. Just 2 clean sheets in Premier League action so far this season. Rangers will pose a couple of problems for them, but the idea for Liverpool is to get on the front foot tonight and see if they can cause some damage.
Is that 4-2-3-1, Fergal? Is that 2 holding midfielders in front of a back four or not?
You would imagine it will be Thiago and Jordan Henderson looking to provide a bit of balance. And then you've got a front four, but I reckon it'll be a 3-1. Salah, Jota and Diaz, and then Darwin Nunez on his own up front. And I think that's the only real way Klopp can get him into the team. And then with a 3 behind him, I think it'll be a bit more handbrake off in terms of how Liverpool will play tonight.
Thank you very much, Fergal. Alan Cawley, what do you make of that?
Very attack-minded, Ruby. He's obviously got the 4... strikers in as such, if you like it, Diaz, Salah, Jota, Nunez, exactly as you said, they're the 2 players that'll sit in front of the back four, is Thiago Henderson, but you look at Alexander Arnold and Tsimikas, they look to attack as well, so it's very attack minded. Normally, as Fergal said, he goes with the 4-3-3, but he's the 4 attacking players in the lineup tonight. And Rangers have conceded 7 goals. They haven't scored any in the Champions League themselves in the 2 outings that they've had, and I'd fully expect Liverpool to take care of them.
What about their slow starts, Alan? Do they have to get out of the traps a bit quicker? I mean, they haven't scored first in, what, I think not in their last 14 games?
Yeah, it's a crazy start, really, Ruben. Well,
the Brentford game.
Yeah, it is. It's a mad start. And again, going back to our chat earlier about them, it's an issue and it's something that has to be addressed, and that adds to the problems that we've already outlined as well. But it's a funny one for me, because when we kind of look at Liverpool over the last 3 or 4 years, and the one thing we speak about with them is in terms of their intensity and the energy that they play with, and they almost come out straight on the front foot and go and attack teams. And when they were in their pomp, and not suggesting they're not in their pomp now, or they've gone away, that they've kind of, they're on a slide, something like what we've seen with some of the other big clubs, but they're still very much in the top 3 or 4. But I just think when you think of them in their pomp, they go out and blitz teams and blow them away in that first 15-20 minutes, and to think they haven't scored the opening goal in 14 games now, that's an unbelievable stat, and that's something that certainly Klopp will want to address straight away. And I think they will tonight. I think they'll go out and take Rangers on the front foot, take the game to them, and I'd fully expect them to take care of Rangers.
The correct way of putting that stat is, have failed to score first in 14 of the last 17 competitive matches, actually is the correct stat for that. But what about Jurgen Klopp's famous press? Has it stopped working?
Well, that goes back to, I suppose, the question Dave posed earlier about, again, the fact that they've been on the run and on the go for the last 3 or 4 years and playing at such a high intensity. Has it taken its toll? And I look certainly at the midfield area, and you look at the 2 players tonight, Thiago and Henderson. Thiago is unbelievable technically and on the ball, and he's fantastic, and he'll have no problem sitting in front of that back four tonight. But he certainly won't be going pressing teams the way you'd normally see in a brilliant Liverpool team. Henderson, who does all those things, but I think he's very much kind of, his energy levels is kind of, he's hitting the latter stage of his career, and I'm not sure he still has that energy in his game. Now, he'll still be fine sitting in front of the back four with Thiago, and I think that shape tonight with the 2 of them sitting in front of the back four will give that bit of protection to the back four, and they'll be fine doing that, and then let the 4 kind of exciting ones get on with it. So, but as I mentioned earlier, it's definitely a problem, Ruby, because the way Klopp likes to play, and as I say, with that energy and that intensity and pressing teams so high up, and we've heard so much about it over the last 3 or 4 years, that's certainly not been the case in the early games, and they've been so easy to get at. And that was my point earlier about when Liverpool were dominating and being brilliant over the last 2 or 3 years, it was so hard for the opposition teams to get at the back four even. But now you look at the game even at the weekend with Brighton, and Brighton are a decent side, a good side, but every time they attack, they look like scoring.
And Alan, from an Irish point of view, nice to see for the first time this season in the matchday squad Caoimhín Kelleher on the bench.
Yeah, it's brilliant, Dave. I'm a big fan of this boy, and I know kind of we like our debates about different individuals and stuff, and we all think, will it be Kelleher, would it be Zunu? And I felt going back at the time when they were competing with each other, when Queevin was fit, that Stephen was kind of edging towards Queevin. But to be fair to Gavin, once he got in, he took his opportunity and did quite well. But I'm delighted to see him back, because you don't play at a club like Liverpool unless you have a serious temperament, the mentality about you for one so young. And we've seen that in all the opportunities that he's got, Dave. And the fact that he's back on the bench, he's very much in Klopp's thoughts, I think, as well. Even though he's the sub keeper, he's a big fan of his. He's a young boy. He needs to just buy his time, take his chances, and the few games that he will get throughout the season.
League Cup is coming up quite soon, so we probably would expect to see him in that.
I think so, because that's the way Klopp has done it over the last kind of 18 months with him, and he's given him the game time in those cup games. And I think that'll be very much the case. And I'd be in no hurry to leave Liverpool if I was Queevin Kelleher. A young boy like that, especially with the age goalkeepers can go on and play it now. He has, as I say, Alisson will eventually move on in 2-3 years, who's a brilliant goalkeeper. He's learning off a brilliant goalkeeper day in, day out. And he will get his time at Liverpool, I've no doubt about that.
And he's such a cool customer, isn't he? From the little we, I suppose, have seen of him, wherever we have seen him, that really comes across. He's just so composed.
Yeah, and that's my point. For one so young to be at a club like Liverpool, and the games that he's played, some high-pressure games. You think of his debut, I think, when he came into the Champions League, and you mentioned the cup final, and he stands up and takes a penalty, and everything that he's had to deal with so far, he's just taken in his stride. And that's what I love most about him, is his temperament. Because, as I said, to play at clubs like that, as big as Liverpool, especially being so young, you'd want to have a serious mentality about you, and he has it.
Okay, gentlemen, we'll leave it there. Just before we go, time to give you the winner of today's copy of FIFA 23. Our question was, of course, which team is currently top of the Premier League? The answer is Arsenal. And today's winner is Debbie Byrne from Carlow. So congratulations, Debbie. Marie will be here tomorrow. But that's it for the moment.